line and to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It is episode number 261, and I have to say this is maybe the swankiest place we've ever done an interview here. I am at the top floor of the Larry H. Miller Group building, and behind me is a gorgeous look at the east side of the valley. In front of me is a gorgeous look at the west side of the valley, and I'm joined with Gail Miller, who is the owner of that. Thank you for taking a few minutes.
Happy to be here.
And, you know, not only owner of all of 80-plus companies.
Right.
Author of the book Courage to Be You, or I almost want to rename it, you know, being a mom and a wife and a Latter-day Saint woman and sharing the journey of it. I appreciate it. As I read the book, I appreciated so much your honesty going, well, we didn't know.
Well, I tried to be honest. I think it doesn't do much good to write a book if it isn't a true story when you're writing about yourself.
One of the things that impressed me, I mean, I guess there's so many questions that I have, but there, you indicate different times within the book of times that you have courage. And I want to hear first person from you. You sort of talk about it in the book, but I'd like you to elaborate the first kiss that you had with your husband, Larry, because I thought that was a particularly unique story.
Well, it goes back to 2 years before that when we were both going into junior high school from different grade schools. And he called me and said, I hear you're cute. Would you like to meet?
And so pretty courageous.
Yeah, we were both pretty courageous. Anyway, we met at my locker the next morning, and I was a little taller than he was. He was, you know, actually nothing came of it. I was a little late. The bell had just rung. We didn't have time to talk, and he never called me back. Yeah. So we saw each other for those 2 years in junior high school, and then one day in the hallway, I saw him coming down the hall, and just, I don't know what made me do it. It was just crazy, one of those impulsive things, and I walked up to him, and I said, kiss me, Larry. And so he said, okay. We went into a teacher's classroom. No one was in there. And he kissed me. He said, I'll be down tonight. So we went sleigh riding that night. And that was the beginning of our courtship, which lasted 6 years.
Wow. Was it a love at first sight? Was there more? I mean, as you kind of look back on it, was it more than just this is middle school lust kind of? I mean, did you feel more to it?
I don't think so. It was just probably the adventure of being a young teenage girl and noticing boys, and he was very active in sports and just a lot of combination of things. So we dated for a long time, but it took a long time to grow into a romance because we were only 14, 15 at the time.
Right.
We don't know much about life then.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
Yeah, but you sure think you do, right?
Yeah, you think you do. I mean, you don't know how much you don't know until you get married, actually.
Yeah.
And then we got married at 21, and I was just figuring it out. This year, I'm thinking we would be married 53 years this year if he were still here.
And you talk about that, too. One of the things, I want to get the exact quote from it. I kind of saved a page. This is an interesting thing. Again, the name of the book is Courage to Be You. One of the things I appreciate about the way that the book is laid out, and I don't know if this was your suggestion or you sort of write it along with Jason Wright or if this is from Deseret Book is Publishing, but you have the things that you have written out, and then on the side there's like just a small excerpt of what you can get in the body, and it's a quote. And I, as I'm looking through, occasionally I'm one of those guys who will write down a quote and put it on the mirror so that I see it every day, or you know, somewhere that it will become a thing. And I'm looking through all these quotes, and I'm going, oh, that's perfect. Oh, I like that one. This one is great as well. But
well,
this one particularly about death sort of struck me. It says, with each loss, no matter how painful, I see more clearly that death demonstrates how much our Father in heaven loves each and every one of us. And then this was the part that struck me, because without it, there is no return to him. And I don't know why I hadn't, that sort of hadn't ever dawned on me, but I mean, that really is the essential part of the returning to him.
Yeah, it's the doorway you step through to get to heaven, and we're not any of us going to get out of that. So it's wise to accept it and realize that it is part of life, and we all have to go through it, and our time will come. But with each death we experience, we have to learn something. We learn how it affects us. And if you've lost someone really close to you, then every death after that brings back those memories and you experience them again, but not in the loss for you, in the loss for the person that is going through it, because you can empathize. At least that's the way I've experienced death.
You know, in the book you talk about how you're remarried. I fairly recently divorced, and the courage to love again is a thing for me. I know divorce is not like death, but that has to be difficult.
It's a real step of courage, because I was not one that thought I would ever get married again. Mm. I didn't need to. I was financially secure. I had my own home. My kids are around. And I thought, there's no reason I would ever get married again. But the man that proposed had a good case, and he's an attorney, so I guess that's why it worked.
Yeah.
But I had known him for a long time in the same neighborhood, and he just, as we talked about it, he said, well, you know, I explained to him I had everything I needed. And he says, well, what about companionship? And I started thinking, you know, I do not have that. Mm-hmm. I have children, but it's not the same thing.
No.
And he had lost his wife, and I knew her, and he knew Larry. So we had a lot of common touch points. And so it made it a lot easier to think about getting married again.
Hmm.
But each case is individual. You have to decide for yourself, because it is a big step. And you go into, I talk in the book about how my first marriage prepared me for a second marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really meant by that is I did a lot of learning what marriage is all about in my first marriage. It's about understanding what's important and what isn't, and what things to worry about, what things not to worry about, and how to be engaged in a relationship that's fulfilling instead of challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that a lot. My new husband and I were very compatible, and he went through the same thing. He had a wife that he was a caregiver too for a long time, and we just learned what was really important in life, and it's not the little stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about, you know, you're more accepting, I guess that's a better way to put it.
One of the things I really appreciate too is, in again, that just sort of this honest and raw thing, you make the statement, when people ask you, would you do it all over again, and you say, no, I would not do it all over again. I would do it again and differently, but I would absolutely not do it all over again.
No, and I agree with that statement. I would say that again, because if we could do it again and do it better, that would be my choice. But at the time we're doing it, that's all we know.
Yeah.
But from looking back, we know there's a better way. We know we could have done better. And sometimes I think if we take the time to think about what we're doing and how it's going to affect us long term, then we would do it different at the time. But in my case, I felt like I didn't know the things I needed to know. I didn't know that I could say to Larry, look, you're their dad. Stay home with them. Come
right
home and be part of the family. Until much later, when the kids were older. And if I had thought about it, well, of course I had the right to say that. We had
right
those kids together.
Right. They're your kids, not,
right,
you know, you alone. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would do it better. I would be a better mom. I'd be a better wife. I'd be a better church member. I would be a better everything I could be, because that's my goal, to be the best I can be. And I admit I made a lot of mistakes, but I don't want to do them again.
But what I appreciate about it is that you're like, but I, you know, the book is called Courage to Be You, and I almost want to call it like continuing to go on, enduring to the end, or, you know, one day at a time. Because
right
it really is just sort of almost this documentation of you saying, well, no, not great, maybe, but did the best I could, and I'm still doing it.
Right, right. That's all we can do, really. But we can learn from history. We can learn from our mistakes, and I think that is what is a catalyst for growth. If we don't just say, well, too bad, I'm just going to go on. But if we say, okay, I didn't do that quite right, how can I do it better? Then we can make a difference in our lives.
Why did you write the book?
Why did I?
Yeah.
I wrote it at the encouragement of my son, who had written Larry's book. He didn't write Driven. Larry wrote that. But there was a follow-up book called Behind the Drive. And my son, he actually compiled it. And he said, Mom, I'll help you do your book. I had started writing my life story maybe 3 years ago, maybe probably longer ago than that. But as I was writing it, I thought, you know, there's really not that much to tell. My life was Larry's life, and whatever I could tell might just be, well, I didn't want it to be an expose. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk about bad stuff. I didn't have all the excitement in my life that Larry had. Nothing really challenging or accomplishing. I didn't go to college. I was a stay-at-home.
I would disagree with everything that you're saying right now, but I understand where you're coming from.
Well, that's the way I felt, and I was a stay-at-home mom. I raised my kids. I didn't work. I didn't do civic things. So I felt like I was really quite uninteresting, and I thought, nobody's going to want to read a book about me. So I moved from an autobiography to experiences, and so this book talks about experiences that I've had that have been growth experiences that perhaps other women who are having hard times in their life or challenging times can read my story and say, well, if she can do it, I can do it. Or, oh, that's how she did it. Maybe it'll work for me. Or, you know, I'm okay. She's in the public eye. I'm not, but I've had similar experiences and she's okay, so I must be okay. I want it to be inspiring. I want it to be hopeful. And women need that, I think. Women need each other. Mm-hmm. And so if I can share anything I've been through that might be helpful to someone else, I'm willing to do that.
You talk about, in great depth, the value of hard work. And I almost hear it screaming through the pages where you're like, this is what's wrong with society right now, is that we don't know hard work. Is that sort of a feeling or a hope of inspiration? Or
no, I didn't really think that. There have been times in my life where I've thought, I wonder how many man hours I put into cleaning the yard or pulling weeds or cleaning the house. And were they well spent? Because we have a lot of effort that goes through our life. We have a lot of hard work that we do, but are we doing it in the things that really count? Yeah, everybody likes a nice yard, but maybe I should have been taking the kids to the park or something, you know? So I think we're not going to get out of this life without hard work. It's just where we direct it that's important.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails from people all the time. Here's one. Dear Dan, I hear your talk about a lifetime service guarantee. Free? Really? Please help me avoid all your fine print and be honest about what free means. You understand that we should be very wary of a free offer? Signed, Skeptical. Hi, Skeptical. I remember 22 years ago when we started PC Laptops and our lifetime service guarantee. People thought it was too good to be true. Well, you know, after a decade, people started believing me a little bit. But you know, it's been 22 years of having the privilege to serve our friends and neighbors like you. Our lifetime service guarantee has become the most trusted warranty in the industry. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop computer for $799 with a lifetime warranty. Check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Here's to seeing you soon, Skeptical.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. One in five children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
You talk also in length about defining success, defining your own success. And then I want to just find it because I like there's sort of three steps. Oh, I'm not going to be able to find it when I need it right now. Hold on. Wait for it. the difference between how the world measures success and how it's measured in heaven. Again, another thing that sort of stuck out to me. You talk about three components. One, the depth of our relationship with God. Number two, the quality of our relationships with others. And then number three, our stewardship over the gifts and resources that God has entrusted to us. So maybe not anything to do with the yard.
No, really not. I've often thought when, in fact, I used to say this to Larry, when you get to heaven, Heavenly Father is not going to ask you how well you did at work.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to ask you how well you did at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that your relationships mean a whole lot more than the time you put in at work. Now, being productively engaged and providing good jobs and helping people enrich their lives, of course, there's value in that, but mm-hmm. not at the expense of your children.
Right.
And I think sometimes I would get angry at him because he'd spend so much time enriching other people's lives. Why can't you do that with your kids? Can't you see the value in them? Can't you see how much they need you? And we had discussions about that, and I think he finally got it, but they were all grown by then. So that's another area where I wouldn't do it the same. I would be more forceful when they were young.
So I have to ask this, just because it's sort of a curiosity, and hopefully I ask it in a delicate enough way. As being, I always click on those things on the internet where it's like, the most wealthiest Arkansan, the most wealthiest whatever. I mean, you are Utah's most wealthy person. Do people, I've got to think that people, associates treat you differently, or that, you know, that you feel like you're treated differently. You know what I'm saying? Does that make a difference to you with other people?
I don't think so. I think it's because I don't wear it on my sleeve. I don't wear fancy clothes or expensive clothes. I don't buy lavish things. I don't take great vacations. Money's not important, and it never has been, because in the very beginning, I didn't have any.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to know that in the very beginning, that you were, in fact, the breadwinner, and that Larry was kind of going, I don't know what I'm going to do, you guys. I'll figure something out.
Yeah, and even before that, growing up, I grew up in a very poor family. And so money was not what defined me, and it never has been. I think what I can do to make the world a better place, or to be a better person and influence other people's lives for good, that's what's important to me. So I think people look at me in that vein. I actually have an executive coach, because when I came into this job, I had not worked our whole marriage. And I stepped into a position that I was not well suited for, but felt like it was my responsibility as the owner of the company to help provide a future. So I think I lost my thought there, but I'm the same person today that I always have been. I haven't let money or success or experiences define who I am. That was defined a long time ago through the things that I've experienced, but kept in check.
Right. It's what I love about the Larry Miller Group, all the outreach that you guys do in the community. I mean, even the fact that we're sitting here, your time is valuable, but that you're willing to sit down but that you're willing to sit down and be able to say, you know what, this is something that I believe in, the courage to be you. I've written this book, and I want to get that, and I want to be able to help and to inspire or to motivate or to empathize with people who may read your book.
Well, I hope they enjoy it. It's really a difficult thing to lay yourself out there like that, because people think they know you.
Right.
But until they can see what you really are, it could be a shock to them.
Yeah, that was another thought that I had as I read about it. I mean, there's some pretty vulnerable stuff in there. And you just sort of spew it out in a book, and then you go, is this all right, everyone? Is this going to be okay?
Yeah. I know what I was going to tell you before. And that is, I have this executive coach, and he's the number one coach in the world. He coaches all over the world, and he actually coached Alan Mulally and Jim Kim and, you know, high-end people. And after he did my 360, he said, you are the nicest person I've ever met. And I thought, wow, what does that say about the rest of the world? Why aren't we all nice? I don't even think about it. It's just, there's no reason not to be nice. So that was a nice compliment. But laying it all out in the book, I guess that's, as I said before. If it's not truthful, it's not going to be believable.
Mm-hmm. And people will see right through it, right? Yeah. If you're putting on some sort of face, people will go, all right.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Gail. Thanks for a book that, you know, you're not letting your guard down or allowing that opportunity for people to see behind the curtain.
Right.
I was just going to say one other thing that I thought was kind of interesting. You talk about, and I like this too, getting the kids to church and the McDonald's. If you share that anecdote, I obviously don't want to give out all those juicy, fun little things within the book, but I thought that was particularly interesting.
Well, my kids responded to bribes really well. So Larry and I didn't leave the church, but we became inactive when we were teenagers because I was working. I worked at the telephone company before we got married, and that involved Sunday work. Larry was playing softball, and that involved playing on Sunday. And then we were dating, and we thought we didn't have time for church. So we moved to Colorado in 1970, and that year, Greg wanted to know where God lived. He was only five. And so I got back into church, and I forgot what your question was. I'm going to say
you're fine. No, talking about how you would get them to go to church.
Oh, okay. So when we got there, and Greg asked that question, then I called all the wards I could find in the phone book, found out where our church was, and they asked the bishop, or told the bishop about this new member in the ward, and he came and talked to us. I have to cough, excuse me.
You're fine.
And so the kids and I started going to church. Well, my kids were, I only had two then, but by the time I was, we had three. I was pregnant when we moved. Mm-hmm. We ended up with five kids there. But before Larry got active, I was taking all the kids to church by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way, we passed a McDonald's. So I'd say, if you be really good in church, we'll go to McDonald's for breakfast after.
Yeah.
Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but more often than not it did. Just kind of a little reward. And I think it boils down to you do what you have to do.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, so I don't know if they even remember. They were pretty little, but it worked for me.
Well, and that's the thing that, you know, if you are a mom or if you are a dad, if you are just a member of the church, even not a member of the church, if you're just, you get to that point sometimes where you can be really hard on yourself. What I really appreciate about it is this is just a testament. This book called Courage to Be You that you've written is just a testament of do the best you can and then keep doing the best you can and you'll get there. I have three questions I want to ask you before I let you go. The first question is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I do. I teach Relief Society.
Nice. Once a month?
Oh, not even that often. We're in a ward of 700 people in downtown Salt Lake City.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have a whole lot of teachers. So I teach maybe three times a year.
Okay.
But I've always been in Relief Society, and I really love it. It's where my heart is.
It's given you the opportunity to serve a bunch. I know that you talk about being a Relief Society president as well.
Yeah, I love that too.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists within the church or make one up, what would you pick?
You know, I don't aspire to callings, and I've only been a Relief Society president once. I've been in many presidencies, but I really loved being a Relief Society president.
What about it did you love?
I love the fact that there was help on my shoulders. I had what I needed, not only from my counselors, but from Heavenly Father. He made sure that I was able to do all the things I needed to do. And it was so rewarding to be able to help sisters. And what was especially nice for me was my experiences through life gave me an empathy for a lot of things that the women in my ward were going through. Mm. So it wasn't like it was all strange to me. I had touch points where I could empathize or understand or help. And we did some fun things. We had a home theater in our house.
Oh, cool.
So once a month, I would just have all the old ladies who never could get out to the movie house come over to my house, and we'd have a movie and lunch. And that was so rewarding to me
because
it made them feel good. They got to visit with each other. And we did Relief Society at my house a whole lot more than we did it at the ward because it was so easy. But it was a good time.
And then the last question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I think the favorite part of my faith is that it's complete, that we have a faith that if you live it, you have resources for everything. You have strength for everything. You have have a guideline and a guide, you know, a roadmap to everything. I remember once in high school, a friend of mine who was trying to discover religion for herself, and her mother told her, you can't join any church till you're 18. So she started going to different churches, and I'd go with her to help her learn about them. Well, I remember going to the Methodist church and some of the others, and finally one day I said to her, Carol, why don't you look into the Mormon church? We have all the answers. And that's how I felt about it. We have whatever we need to help us get through this life. And I don't say that arrogantly. I say it humbly, because there are so many things that we can look to our religion and our faith for that help us. We don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, I love that. All right. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.